Russia has captured a key eastern Ukrainian town. Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Joseph, I guess this underscores the manpower advantage Russia still has, doesn't it?
Bob, yes. Good afternoon from Kyiv, the capital. As soon as I finished speaking with you yesterday, I ran to the train station and took the express train, which takes about 6 hours to reach Kyiv. And amid all the craziness of war, that train, it's always like a library. It's a refuge. You can order a glass of wine and some dinner and just kind of relax as you look at the autumn scenes, the peaceful fields and the Golden Dome churches, the little villages with chickens and pigs running around as I travel through Western Ukraine. But then to know that such similar scenes in the east of the country are the, you know, there's such a place of such intense fighting. And as the Russians, you know, they've been making this very slow progress. I mean, the city that they've just captured, which means in translation, the name means gift of coal. So it's a coal mining place in Donbass. The Russians have spent more than 900 days trying to take this small city. And so we do have to put that in perspective that, you know, despite all the vast resources of the Russian military, they can't take Odessa or Kharkiv or Kyiv. They can take these small cities, but only with great effort. And it was Ukrainians, the Ukrainian military chose to pull out of the city rather than incur further losses. And, you know, sadly, the city is not even the city anymore. I mean, it's absolutely destroyed. It's gone. There's nothing more there. And so that's, you know, and so it's kind of a strange, I mean, the Russian military bloggers claim it as a major victory, but it's a strange victory to behold. And one thing I noticed as I was walking around Kyiv today, but also in Lviv and Odessa by the sea last week, is that everywhere I go now, Bob, people say they listen in Ukraine. Ukrainians listening to WGN, listening to these daily reports.
Wow.
Either tuning in live or listening later on YouTube. So it's great to see that. And as I arrived in Kyiv last night, around 11 o'clock, the air raid alarm was sounding. There was a drone threat for the city. And then I saw the news from Kharkiv. The Russians pounded Kharkiv once again last night, that city 30 miles from Russia. Among the things that they hit was an apartment complex full of people sleeping. They sent a 250-kilogram aerial bomb to a residential building. Among the people killed was a three-year-old girl. So once again, scenes of great tragedy in Kharkiv City. And those aerial bombs are launched from more than 100 kilometers in Russian soil, that sort of safe zone, still that territory where the White House refuses to let Ukraine use the precision American weapons to hit. And so places like Kharkiv remain as a sitting duck. And so that's extremely difficult. And the reason why I'm here in Kyiv, I can tell you about next week, because I'm gathering some stories that I will be able to share with you all next week. But the past few days in Warsaw, Poland, it's the annual Warsaw Security Forum. It's, you know, this has been going on for many years, probably decades. And you get the best security analysts and experts and generals, retired and active, from all over the world. And I spoke with an American I know who was attending, and she said she was really disturbed by what she saw. You know, Warsaw in Poland, not so far from Ukraine. In fact, that's a major, you know, sort of supply point and a place where volunteers, you know, they fly to Warsaw and then drive to Ukraine. And so Poland knows the threat. Poland knows the, you know, what Moscow was like in the days of communism. And still, she said, gathered there in Warsaw, people from all over the world, she said she felt like she was in La La Land, that most people, she said about 50% of the people, you know, think that the only solution is some kind of negotiation or appeasement. And then the other 50% were just kind of had their heads in the sand and just pretending things aren't as bad as they are. And they talk about rebuilding and everything besides trying to win right now. She said one of the only voices that was trying to get people to wake up was former top American General Ben Hodges. And that he gave this passionate speech saying, if we don't help Ukraine quickly, the war is coming to us. It's coming to Poland. It's coming to Germany. It's coming to Europe and beyond. And so the people who, you know, are here in Ukraine all the time, who pay attention to what's happening, the sense I got is that they were very concerned about the attitude or the sort of the lack of urgency at this Warsaw Security Forum. And so I think that is something that it's important that people realize, you know, sort of that dichotomy of attitude. And if you think, like when I talk with American veterans, those who go to the front line here. And then when I, you know, almost every this happens in many conversations here throughout Ukraine. It's very sobering. I mean, they say that Europe and the United States are not ready for this type of warfare. They better start paying attention to Ukrainians who, after 2.5 years, have learned how to adapt. But so many Americans who come here, American veterans say that if you drop some top American soldiers into the front lines here, they would probably get obliterated. We're not ready for it. And the other thing I get from this is that when you talk with Ukrainian soldiers, I have many friends who are at the front lines. They don't want to surrender. And I think this gets missed. Like, when we see the stories reported about, you know, is Zelensky open to negotiating? And, you know, if President Zelensky ever wanted to negotiate with Russia, if he ever said that, there's a strong sense here that he could no longer be president because the people don't want that. And the soldiers don't want that. And Zelensky doesn't want it. We miss this in our American storytelling about Ukraine, but Zelensky really represents the people. It's more democratic here in that sense. And everything he says is what the common guy at the front line often says as well.
Interesting to hear that point of view from Ukraine, and gratifying to know that folks in Ukraine are listening to us, Joe. They will appreciate this text from one of our Chicago listeners. My in-laws fled their homeland, Lithuania, from the Russian invasion of World War II. They were separated and put into labor camps in Germany, not knowing if they'd ever see one another again. They came to America with only two American dollars and a two-year-old boy. They each spoke seven languages. I see their faces on TV when I watch the news of the war in Ukraine and the atrocities committed by Putin and his soldiers. Sorry for the long story, but I'm connected to this war solely because of my in-laws. I want to thank Bob for his continued communication with Joe Lindsley. A lot of connections here and everywhere to what's happening there, Joseph.
Yeah, and I think it's those personal connections that's where the strength has come for this fight. Ukraine, there's a great Ukrainian diaspora, but as we see from that letter, or that text, it's not only Ukrainians. I mean, all these nations that live behind the Iron Curtain and everyone that had to flee, that was because of Moscow. And Moscow, the question is, has Moscow really changed? And it seems that, well, we know they haven't because of what we've seen these past 2.5 years. And, as an interesting, I think sometimes we forget sort of that these simple stories and the how important they are. But a week ago or a couple of weeks ago, there was a policy expert from Washington, D.C., who's close to the world of Donald Trump. And we took him throughout Ukraine and introduced him to a lot of people. And at the end of his trip, I said, what is your lasting impression of Ukraine? And this to me was extremely revealing. He said that, when he was back in Washington and he works, he's a very smart, educated person working on national, global geostrategic security policy. And he said back in Washington, he thought that this was only about Zelensky and the government against, the government of Russia. He figured that everyone in Ukraine would be bedraggled and complaining and wanting to give up. And he said, Joe, I was shocked. Pretty much everyone I met, from the baristas to the waitresses to taxi drivers to tech people, each one was fully committed to doing everything they could to win. He said, I had no idea Ukraine would be like that. He it was such an eye-opening thing for him. This is an entire nation of people working for victory. And I do think that story does get missed a lot in the U.S.
Yeah, that is revealing. Joseph Lindsley in Kyiv. Thank you very much, Joseph. Talk to you tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Thank you, Bob.